She's never been interested in you.
Okay, okay. I'll tell you what. I'm gonna cry a special tear for you and Kiwi tonight, big guy. One big tear.
I kicked the bottom of his bunk and he retreated.
Asshole, I muttered.
I tried to fall asleep, but it didn't come easily. When I finally did drift away, I dreamt of Kiwi, Saurians, and multi-legged aliens gripping me with all six of their freaky hands.
Ha!
Shouted Veteran Harris the next day when the DNA test results were released to the unit.
A big friggin' zero. That's what I suspected all along. At least no one died for your little fantasy, McGill.
He stomped away, shaking his head and mumbling. Pretty much everyone gave me the evil eye after that. Carlos looked like he was going to eat sitting next to someone else for a minute. Then he sighed and plopped himself down next to me.
You're killing my mojo, McGill, he said. I'm never going to get laid again if I keep hanging out with you.
That's quite a sacrifice for friendship, I told him. Thanks, man. He shook his head and we ate quietly. After a few minutes, Natasha came and sat down with us. We both looked at her inquisitively.
Don't stare, she said. This is just me being friendly, not a marriage proposal or anything.
Carlos immediately began chatting her up. I could see this flattered and amused Natasha, so I didn't interrupt. I kept thinking about the alien I'd met, and about Kiwi. Before we could finish lunch, the aliens made their next move. We jumped up, shoving food into our faces as the alarms went off. We rushed out and got our kits together. The bunker rang with the sound of 100 pairs of stomping boots.
The bastards couldn't let us finish a meal, Carlos complained.
Why do they keep coming when we beat them every time? Natasha asked. You think they'll hit the walls again?
Ever seen a lizard in your backyard? Carlos asked in return. They never looked like geniuses to me.
Yeah, but they just keep dying.
I lost track of the conversation as we reached the surface. The heat of day made us slam our visors closed the second we exited the bunker. It was intolerable outside. Troops were scrambling for cover everywhere. It took me a second to realize they were being shot at, and at first I couldn't figure out where the fire was coming from. But then I looked up and over my shoulder. They had come at our fortress from behind this time. Somehow a few hundred snipers had scaled the mountain at our backs and crawled out on top of the cliffs. There were no juggers in the group, only Saurian regulars. They peppered our exposed positions from above. 2 dozen troops were nailed down to the ground before they could scramble to cover. I ran and took cover with Carlos at our section of the wall. More troops came out of the bunkers behind us, confused and looking around. By the time they realized what was happening, they were being cut down. They scrambled for cover too, but many didn't make it far. I watched them die, shot over and over again by the snipers. There was nothing I could do. I wanted to run out and drag them to my safe position, but the veterans were screaming for us to hold our positions on the covered wall.
Let them die, Harris said, walking the line, bent at the waist. There's nothing you could do for them. They'll be popping back out of the oven in less than an hour.
I wasn't sure how we were going to meet this new threat, but the counterattack plan was quickly deployed by my commanders. Earth's legions were nothing if not experienced and versatile. While we hunkered down and endured the crack and whine of fire from above, quartermasters ran down the line and issued us new equipment, scopes and extended barrels for our snap rifles. It quickly became a game of cat and mouse. We nosed our way out for cover, eyeing the cliffs. Sometimes an enemy sniper sighted us before we did him. In that case, our man went down with a new hole in his skull. Almost as often, one of our light infantry spotted an enemy sniper lifting his scaly snout over the top of the cliff. When that happened, we painted the target with an infrared beam and everyone leaned out and blew the lizard away. It was difficult as the range and angle weren't the best. And it's always easier to have the high ground. But we took them all out in time. There were just too many of us. 1,000 light infantry gunners against 200 or so Saurians. They didn't really have a chance. After 20 minutes, they stopped sniping at us. They'd either withdrawn, or they were all dead.
Did you get any hits?
Carlos asked me excitedly. I nodded. One.
Kill shot?
I think so.
Lucky Frigger, I shot two, but they were both already sliding down the side of the mountain.
Too bad. When the all clear was sounded, we headed back toward our bunker. A familiar voice behind us called us back.
Not you guys, not today, Harris said. All my light infantry are to report to the mine entrance.
We did a collective U-turn and headed for the base of the cliffs. There, sealed portals were located. We found our units and lined up, rifles held to chests, visors shut. We were met by none other than Centurion Graves himself.
All right, he said. This is real, people. We've just had snipers appear on the roof coming out of those air shafts. We've got reports of more enemy intrusions in the lower regions of the mine itself. It's our belief they tunneled in from the far side of this mountain.
We looked at each other in alarm. I could read everyone's thoughts. Some workers' rebellion this was turning out to be.
We're going in, squad by squad. Inside there are lots of twisty tunnels. Most of them lead downward. But there are shafts, too. Avoid those. They go straight down with sheer sides to the bottom. When I say bottom, I mean 2 or 3 miles deep.
This already sounds like bullshit, Carlos told me.
You better give the bio running the revival unit a tip. She's going to be earning it today.
I took a breath and hoped he was wrong.
When you get into the tunnels, spread out into fire teams of 5. A weaponeer or a veteran will be leading every team. Our mission is to locate the enemy. Due to a high content of metals, the tunnels are immune to our sensors. If you make contact, withdraw, and report in person. Do not attempt to repel the enemy alone. Do I make myself clear?
There was a general shout of, Sir, yes, sir. Graves was walking along the line, eyeing each of us in turn. He stopped when he got to me.
One last thing, recruits, he said. There are a lot of goodies down there. Uranium, gold, diamonds, every mineral worth stealing that you've ever heard of, and plenty that you haven't. But we aren't going to take anything. Do you know why?
He was looking straight into my eyes as he said this. I felt like he was asking me personally, but at the same time I was pretty sure he was talking to the entire unit. The fact that he was shouting every word reinforced this impression. I stared straight ahead, deciding to play dumb. After a few seconds, he walked away to stare down another recruit. Carlos chose this moment to pipe up with an answer to the Centurion's last question, which I was pretty sure was rhetorical.
"Because we aren't thieves, sir?"
Graves whirled around on him and marched back. Since Carlos had planted himself at my side, as he usually did, this made for an uncomfortable proximity between me and the officer. Just in case some form of discipline was required, Veteran Harris rushed close as well. He glared at Carlos from under bushy eyebrows.
"Would you care to elaborate, recruit?"
Graves asked.
"We shouldn't take anything. The Saurians hired us, and we're here to protect the mine, not steal from it."
I could tell Carlos was stressed. He just couldn't keep his mouth shut. The Centurion stared at him for a moment longer, then walked away slowly.
"That's a good answer, recruit," he said.
Carlos was visibly relieved.
"But it's wrong,"
the officer finished. He nodded to Veteran Harris.
"Veteran, could you explain it to them, please?"
"I'd be glad to, sir."
As the Centurion walked away, Veteran Harris walked the line like a tiger pacing in his cage, a pissed-off, hungry tiger.
"Let me clue you morons into some realities," he shouted. "The reason why none of you will steal so much as a hairpin of metal from this planet is right above us."
He pointed his finger up dramatically into the sky. We all glanced up, seeing nothing but hazy clouds. We quickly returned our eyes to the front and center.
"I'm talking about that big ship up there in the sky. The Corvos is a troop transport, people. It is licensed and contracted to do one thing, carry an Earth Legion. That's it, nothing else. If we're caught smuggling local goods off-world, especially the very materials the good fork-tongued residents of Cancri IX sell to the Galactics, we'll be found in violation of every treaty Earth ever signed."
He paused for a moment while he let that sink in. I understood the problem immediately.
Cankri 9 was called Steel World because it was extremely mineral-rich. That's what they provided to other worlds, minerals. If we took a sample, we would be violating not just local law, but galactic law.
And do you lazy, thieving, good-for-nothing, sorry sacks of excrement know what the penalty for breaking any galactic law is?